Word of mouth.
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 Word of
mouth.
This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. We've all seen it before, the threatening image of a slate-gray fin slowly rising above the surface of the ocean. And then, inevitably, the gaping mouth, long white belly, and rows of serrated teeth. And whether you're watching a certain Spielbergian horror film or Discovery Channel's Shark Week, few living predators loom larger than the great white shark. While Cy Montgomery is a naturalist and author, her most recent book is a look into the mysterious and, as we find, very often misunderstood world of the great white sharks. It is called The Great White Shark Scientist. And Cy, it's so great to have you back with us.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here, Virginia.
Well, now most people head in the opposite direction when they see a great white shark. What drew you to them?
Well, actually, I was thrilled to know that they've showed up off Cape Cod's iconic beaches. And this is a new development in the past, like, 10 years.
Right, because they were thought to be extinct around that area, weren't they?
Yeah, they weren't thought to be around at all. But I've stayed friends with this wonderful guy, Greg Skomel, who is a shark biologist with the Mass Division of Marine Fisheries. We've known each other for 30 years, and the great white is his favorite shark of all. As you know, we have 24 species of sharks in New England waters, so we had plenty to do. But he was delighted when these animals first started showing up off the Cape's beaches. And 2 years ago, he invited me and photographer Keith Ellenbogen to come join him on some of his shark sorties, trying to figure out how many of these animals might be swimming harmlessly, unseen and unsuspected.
Well, when you say beaches and sharks, you know, people get freaked out. What do we get wrong about sharks?
Well, one, the idea that sharks are going to hurt you. I gathered some statistics for this book that people just absolutely love. I mean, first of all, sharks, there's 500 species of sharks, and most of them are only a few feet long and wouldn't bother you at all. But the total number of people killed by all sharks yearly worldwide is only about 11. But if you look at the other dangers, that some of which are in your home, let's look at some real dangers: buckets and pails. The number of Americans injured by buckets and pails over a period of like 2 years is 11,000. If you look at the number of Americans injured by room fresheners, 2,600 in 1 year. Now, the chance of being killed by a shark is 1 in 37 million. The chance of dying from the flu is 1 in 63.
So why, then, do we have this sense, or people seize upon this idea, that shark attacks are so frequent?
It scares us. I mean, you don't walk into a room worrying if a room freshener is going to bother you. But if you see one of these very large predatory fish who are, in fact, capable of biting off the head of an 800-pound elephant seal in 1 second, that gives you more pause. But in reality, you are far more likely to be hurt in the car driving to the beach than you are by a shark. As I mentioned, there's hundreds of species. Most of them are under 3 feet long. Most of them have no interest in us. And a great white shark, what they normally eat is a nice, big, juicy, blubbery seal. That is their steak with chocolate cake. You and me, piece of stringy celery lying on the counter. I mean, what would you want to eat? Now, it's true, they sometimes make mistakes. But doctors and nurses make mistakes, and sharks, like doctors and nurses, provide an important service for us. They are the apex predators of the seas. They're the ones making the sea work right. If you look at what kind of stewards we've been of the sea, not so good. Scientists tell us that in the year 2050, there will be more plastic in the oceans than fish. A third of our fisheries are crashing. A ton of shark species are disappearing. And when we kill off our apex predators, we start getting what's known as a trophic cascade. The whole balance of everything goes bad, right down to the water quality. Not long ago, off New England, we had a crash of our scallop fishery. Mm-hmm. So when we start messing with sharks, we're messing with the whole ocean.
So in this book, you do follow the biologist Greg Scommel, who you go out on a boat with him. You know, it's sort of set up as a chronology of his work on the Cape. And a big part of that is to tag these sharks so that they can follow them by both video and satellite. And how do you tag a great white shark?
It isn't easy. What Greg needs to do his work is, one, very good weather so that, two, both the boat and, three, the spotter plane can go out. You need eyes in the sky and that you can be on your boat close enough to essentially pierce the shark's ear while he's not paying attention. Now, try to do that while you're on a boat that's bucking over the waves. But Greg can do it. And it's wonderful to be with Greg. He knows so much about these animals, and he loves them, and he knows them individually. He knows individuals like Mary Lee.
Right, he has names for them.
Oh, yeah. In fact, there's an app that you can follow them in real time on your phone and say, oh, Mary Lee is off New Jersey right now. But in addition to satellite-tagged sharks whose movements you can follow every day, he has other sharks that are tagged so that they will ring in with a series of buoys all over the Cape. Mm-hmm. So you can tell when they pass near this buoy that, oh, gosh, Salty was here at 12 o'clock noon, and he stayed until 12:20, and then he went off to this other buoy where he pinged in at 1:20.
So what do all these little data points tell us in the aggregate about the lives of the great whites?
Well, the satellite data and the other tagging data tells us where they're going, which is extremely interesting because they don't go necessarily where we thought they did all the time. Some of them travel great distances, and the ones who travel the greatest distances seem to be the females. So this may have something to do with where great white sharks give birth. But in addition to this, he's been doing a video study in which he uses GoPros to film the animals from above, below, and the sides to find out who's who. And once you know who's who, you can make an estimate of the number of animals out there because you will recite individuals that you've already recognized, and there's a mathematical formula that you can then estimate the population. And there are probably way more than we suspect.
I'm with Sy Montgomery. She's a naturalist and author, and her most recent book is a look into the mysterious and misunderstood world of great white sharks, and it is called The Great White Shark Scientist. Sy, this is a picture book. It's from the Scientist in the Field series, so it is aimed at kids?
Yes. Yeah. Although, you know, the pictures by Keith Ellenbogen are so great that anybody would enjoy.
And we do get these scenes from the daily life of a shark scientist. Beautiful photographs, as we mentioned. But a few things struck me. There are a lot of days when just not a lot appears to happen. So how do you make this an exciting draw for young readers?
Well, science isn't always something exciting happening, and that you're not going to see a shark every time you go out. But that stuff is important to know, too. I mean, negative data is important data as well. And even if you don't see a shark, we could check in with some of these buoys and see if the buoy saw a shark. But I think for kids, you know, kids love to explore stuff. Kids are so naturally, I think, connected to the natural world that I think they'd have a great time with Greg on the boat, even if we weren't seeing any sharks at all. You're going to see seals. Maybe you're going to see one of these animals that often are mistaken for sharks. There's a huge fish whose fin sticks up out of the water like a shark's. It's called an ocean sunfish or a mola mola. And we saw one of these things. And this is why beaches close. They see the mola mola. Oh. Interestingly, the iconic fin that you see sticking up out of the water, that usually is not the great white shark. Their fins don't come out of the water very much. And the reason? They get sunburns, just like we do.
On their fins?
Yes.
Well, there was one day when you were all out in the water. This was off the Cape. And you spotted 3, maybe even 8 new sharks within a matter of hours. How rare was that?
Well, in August, it turns out that was kind of a typical day for Greg. I could not believe some of the stuff that went on. And that particular day, you know, we always take lunch with us for those, you know, hours that nothing is happening. Yeah. I mean, poor Greg, he'd just get ready to bite his peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and Wayne, the pilot, would find him another shark or another two sharks. And so many times it was like, okay, Greg, which one do you want to follow, the one over here or the one over there? And it was really action-packed and exciting. And the GoPro cameras kept filling up with video. It was fantastic. I could not believe that day. It was so great.
Well, you did, in Guadalupe, go under the surface. You went into a shark cage, right?
That was a blast.
Oh, tell me, what happened?
Well, I was interested to see what it would feel like to be up close and personal, not in the murky green waters of the Cape. And a lot of people go to South Africa to do this. Some people go to Australia to do this. But nearby was Guadalupe Island, and off the shores of that island is beautiful, clear blue water where you can see for 100 feet, easy. When we went down in the cage the first time, I have to admit my heart was pounding. So for the first 5 minutes, not much happened. I mean, some pretty fish called fusiliers came into the cage with us. Some of the bait pieces were floating into the cage with us. Little jellyfish floated in the cage and stung me on the cheek. Felt like a little kiss. Didn't bother me at all. But then, off to one side, it was like the sea itself had become flesh and gathered itself into the shape of a shark and came swimming right toward us. And we were in a cage. I knew I was safe, but I've got to tell you, I did not feel scared at all. What I felt as the animal got closer and closer was this great sense of tranquility. I felt perfectly safe and thrilled to be in the ocean with this beautiful shark. And, you know, I had read loads of books on great white sharks. I'm friends with Richard Ellis, who wrote that really iconic book, The Great White Shark.
Yeah.
And he described his lasting impression of, you know, seeing this mouth capable of swallowing a child full of teeth. But that was not what I saw. The mouth of all the sharks that we saw over the 3 days that I was diving in the cage with them was not gaping. The animal looked elegant and beautiful and sleek. He was shining like a knight in white satin. And having him come nearby made me feel calm, because here was somebody who knew what they were doing about the seas. We've been in charge of the seas just a little bit of time. These sharks have been in charge of the seas for over 140 million years. But just lately, with us in charge, we've been messing it up. So I was glad to see somebody who knew what he was doing.
Well, you are among those doing your part to change the perception of sharks. What are some examples of how people are starting to better understand shark culture and rebranding this predatory great white image?
Boy, well, it is great. When you go to the Cape, you go into any store and shark pride is evident everywhere. There's T-shirts that say, "Welcome to Chatham, home of the great white shark." There are mugs with great white sharks on them. A lot of them have jokes about, you know, "Welcome tourists, yum, yum." But people are excited about having these predators. And I've heard a number of people say to me, like, gee, used to be you'd say great white shark, everyone would run away from the beach. Now people are running to the beach. And there are tours to see the seals who have brought the great white sharks here. I think people are much more interested in the return of our native wildlife, which is showing our seas are healthy.
So if somebody, you know, they've watched too much Shark Week, they have that kind of phobia, any pointers to keep themselves feeling safe from great white?
Yeah, well, I like to tell people, if you are not afraid to walk into a room with a room freshener, if you are...
How do people hurt themselves with room fresheners,
by the way? I think it's allergies, but 2,600 Americans were injured by room fresheners in a single
year. Well, my favorite was 43,000 injured by toilets.
Yes, yes. If you're not afraid of your toilet, then you shouldn't be afraid of a great white shark. And, you know, it does make you wonder, like, well, how can the toilet injure you? I guess, you know, you could stick your head in there and drown. I mean, I don't know, but it's extremely, extremely rare. We don't worry about these things. We should not worry about sharks. And to be shark smart, I mean, all you have to do to keep yourself safe is don't swim near the seals, which you're not supposed to do because it's illegal for a number of reasons.
Because the seal are where the shark is going to eat.
That's right. And that's when the shark could make a mistake. But most people bitten by great white sharks survive the attack because the shark doesn't want to eat you and spits you out. It's a mistake. And it's a very rare mistake, far more rare than the mistake that a doctor or nurse is going to make and kill you off.
A little bit of cold comfort there. But Cy, thank you so much.
Thank you. A pleasure to be talking
with
you.
Another delightful book, Cy Montgomery, a naturalist and an author. Her most recent book is called The Great White Shark Scientist. And you'll find a link to that and all of her work. That's at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.